Hi everyone, Sam here from Brainwaves. This week we've had a bit of disturbance along the line. You'll notice it in some of Jamie's audio and especially later towards the end when something happens. We can't really explain it, we don't know what's happening. Just to let you know, that's the issues with Jamie's audio for this week. Hopefully next week it's all back up on track. Enjoy the show.
I'm Ian McAllister, and I beat Sam at most of the games last Sunday.
I'm Sam Maggs, and I'm plotting my revenge.
I'm Jamie Adams, and I'm good for 28 days or your money back.
And this is Brainwaves, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news. And the headlines for Sunday, the 22nd of July. Get your dinosaur on in a new Jurassic Park miniatures game. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is still free parking? And overturn your pledge for this dodgy Kickstarter. All this and more on this week's Brainwaves.
Mondo Studios, previous publishers of The Thing Infection at Outpost 31. Have announced their new game, an asymmetrical dungeon crawler in the Jurassic Park universe. Yes, it's Jurassic Park The Chaos Gene. You can play as one of four factions: InGen, the Park Visitors, Raptors, or the T-Rex. Each faction has its own unique goals for the scenarios, and as you play through, as with most dungeon crawlers, there'll be leveling, XP, loot, that kind of thing. It's going to be first available at San Diego Comic-Con, and is planned for an autumn release. It's interesting, we're seeing another Jurassic Park game in such a very short space of time. Ravensburger put out Jurassic Park Danger recently as well.
And we've got the new Dinosaur Island Kickstarter is on its way soon as well. We've seen quite a few sort of dino-themed games since the new Jurassic World films came onto.
Yeah, there was also quite an in-depth kind of park builder PC game as well, wasn't there?
Jurassic World Evolution, I believe.
That actually looked pretty cool, to be honest. But this looks alright.
I mean, the minis look fine, but, you know, they're minis.
I mean, I love that you can play as the Raptors or the T-Rex.
Who doesn't want to play as Raptors
Fantastic.
Or T-Rex?
There's a Goldblum miniature.
There is a Goldblum miniature.
Not that it looks 100%
yeah,
accurate.
It's enough,
but
it's enough that you go, that is the character. Whether it looks like the actor or not remains to be seen.
He's not laying down. I'm sure we'll see a bit more news come out during San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm sure maybe something at Gen Con.
Seems likely, doesn't
Very.
It?
In Gen Con, possibly?
Yeah. Boom. He's here all week. Tip your wages.
So, USAopoly have announced possibly the strangest version of Monopoly we've ever seen. 40K Monopoly. Warhammer 40,000 license. Who's this for? That's my first question.
I guess people who are fans of Monopoly and also gigantic war games.
But that makes no sense.
Of course it doesn't.
Have you seen the individual character things for it? They're all
not,
like heresy symbols
yes,
and stuff.
Yes, we've got six different diecast tokens which represent the different factions. We've got an Imperial Guard bayonet, or is that a Town War Knife? It might be a Space Marine helmet, a Chaos eight-pointed star. It's all unique things, and building outposts and fortifications instead of houses and hotels.
Fantastic.
Mayfair for Warhammer 40K is Holy Terror, because of course it is. But the thing is, it's Monopoly, but it's recommended for 13+.
I guess because the content?
That's the only reason I'd say.
Let's face it, 40K has a lot of space Nazis in it.
Yeah.
But the Monopoly version doesn't. It's just got names of things. There's no context at all.
I don't know.
I find this a really weird move.
Probably graphical images.
I mean, presumably Games Workshop got paid quite a bit for the license and they just went, yeah, whatever.
Surely, yeah, it must be.
Seems reasonable to me.
Any way to get the license out in more among the pop culture.
Yeah.
I suppose
especially when they do seem to be trying to do more intro games like Kill Team, Shadespire, things like that. Getting that name out there, that's good for them.
It's more of what they were doing with video games as well. Several years ago, you know, they took before they were very exclusive with their licensing. Now it's more of a scattergun approach. They think, you know, we'll put everything out there, get what we can, and in all, it seems to be reaping not bad returns.
It does seem to be working, yeah. Well, we'll see if there's any more news on that in the future.
There's not going to be any more news, folks. There's a 40k Monopoly coming out. That's the news.
That's your lot.
I'm waiting for 40k Cluedo.
Did the Emperor do it? Or
it was Horus on the something. Spirit of Vengeance with his Worldbreaker.
We're going to get letters about that. You realize something about that's going to be wrong, right?
Oh, yeah, and I expect it. Oh, well.
And finally, in the headlines this week, it seems pretty much every week for the last little while we have talked about strange Kickstarter goings-on, and this week is absolutely no exception. In the last few days, the Kickstarter for Overturn Rising Sands has come under a massive amount of scrutiny. The first accusation started flying a little over a week ago, I think, now, where someone had pointed out that the rulebook that had gone up for the game was extremely similar, i.e. copy and pasted, from the rulebook for Massive Darkness by Cool Mini or not. I've had a look at the PDF that was put together of the rulebook side by side, and that was enough to make me put out a sort of little PSA on our Twitter feed and our Facebook page earlier today saying, steer away from this Kickstarter, this looks extremely dodgy, because a lot of it is literally copy and pasted. Many are calling this a scam. There are no actual minis produced for the game, as it's a typical sort of Kickstarter game with lots of miniatures and fancy boards and cards and stuff, everything you'd expect from a big sort of budget Kickstarter. Their goal was extremely low at £25,890. They are currently sitting at £94,898. That was about £120 earlier today. So, and they are taking a massive plunge, a massive hit with this Kickstarter at the moment. But they only have 47 hours to go, and it looks like it may still fund. I've got a quote from Stuart Gardside of Studio 51, who reached out to creators early on in the process of creating the game. And he says that the lack of willingness to address the issues that he raised with all the stuff that was going on, the sort of questions about the nature of the Kickstarter, combined with the lack of willingness to cancel the campaign, all feels like there's something else going on. Either he's financially broke or he's quite willing to run with the cash. Stuart went on to say that he's mentored hundreds of creators now since 1997, and this is the first where I felt that he's not genuinely interested in resolving the issues and is more about the money. My friend Keith McLennan of Cardboard and Coffee, I'll put a link to that in the show notes, had a little dig around the comments section where the creator had responded to some of the criticisms. There's various ones that he dug up, but this one in particular stunned me. This is from the creator himself. Because this isn't the rulebook that the backers are going to get, it may bear similarities with a certain game, but as an alpha version, it was only provided to the backers so they could get a basic understanding of the game. It may have backfired on us, but there's nothing much we can do about it but to assure that the actual rulebook, not the rules, is very different in terms of presentation and organisation. That's all I can say in our defence. So basically he's admitting to plagiarising the rulebook. Completely out and out admitting it. And also saying that the final rulebook will be different, so what game are you getting?
Yeah, at the same time, you said the rulebook, but not the rules, is very different.
Yeah, so I'm going to just play devil's advocate for the sake of it, in a sense. So yeah, he is just saying kind of it's the rulebook that is similar at the time.
I mean, it's not similar, Sam. It is like there are literally bits that are copy and pasted from the Master of Darkness
understand.
Rulebook.
But as he's saying there, is this just for the sake of kind of getting a formatted rulebook out to backers for the moment? And that he has kind of just gone to a game that's extremely similar to his game and said, that's a decent layout for something like this. I'm going to very much do it almost page for page. Fair enough. I'm with you there. Yeah. As a way of just kind of quickly getting out something that looks pretty good out to backers so they get an understanding of what they're getting.
Yeah, but the rules are literally, like, it's literally the same game.
Okay.
As far as the rulebook is concerned, as far as the rulebook they put out is literally the same as Massive Darkness. Like, there are some word changes here and there, there's some slight differences, but there's a lot of text basically literally copy and pasted in between. So we'll put a link to the PDF in the show notes so people can make up their own minds. But we thoroughly encourage you to stay away from this Kickstarter. Unfortunately, it's going to be finished by the time this podcast goes out.
But we'll see what happens, and we can have a little update on Twitter or something like that.
Yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on it as things progress.
Breaking news, the Kickstarter for Overturn Rising Sands has been suspended. More information can be found in the show notes.
Witcher series, a beloved video game series adapted by CD Projekt Red from the series of novels by Andrzej Sapkowski, I hope I said that right.
Beautifully said.
Thank you. Is bringing a tabletop RPG. to everyone. It's going to be released at Gen Con, and it's going to be set between The Witchers 2 and 3. Published by Artalsorian Games, who are also going to be reprinting recently the updated Cyberpunk 2020 book called Cyberpunk Red. Both Cyberpunk and The Witcher have the Artalsorian Games founder, Mike Pondsmith, designing. Initially, the game was announced in 2015, but Pondsmith was advising on the recently unveiled Cyberpunk 2077, and that took more time than he expected. So, he's back, and he said, right, it's coming out in just under a month. Sounds excellent. I have not played The Witcher. Everyone tells me I should. It sounds like my kind of thing. I've read the first two or three novels of the Witcher series, which sound fantastic. I very much enjoyed them. So I think I will have a look and see how this game goes. And then I'll probably pick up Wild Hunt. I know I'm going to get a slagging by a lot of people going, you haven't played The Witcher? What is wrong with you? But,
We can't play it. Really.
It sounds like something that's right up my alley.
Hobby World have announced a brand new edition of Spyfall. Following Spyfall and Spyfall 2, we are now getting Spyfall Time Travel. Swapping the question of where is the group to when is the group. Spyfall's one of my favourite party games, to be honest, guys. I don't know about how you feel about it. I think it's a really decent time. Spyfall Time Travel, I'm kind of up for it. I suppose it just really gives you more locations, really.
More of what you
I
want,
mean, one
yeah.
of those is a Western saloon. That could easily slot into Spyfall 1 or 2. They're not exactly travelling through time or anything like that. It's just more locations.
Are they going to be... Do you think they'll mix them up? Or you, I suppose you can mix them up.
Yeah, I guess. Unless
I see no reason why you
can't. You're just going to have a big database going, right, which ones are we using?
I mean, Spyfall's kind of had this already, didn't it? Like, it has, like, Crusades and, like, space and things like that in it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely sure why it's time travel.
Well, just looking through what they've got here, it does seem a bit more across time centered.
Okay.
So we've got Robin Hood's Merry Men, Neanderthal Cave, World War II tank battle, the Black Plague, pyramid construction. So we've got a bit more kind of, but it seems all right.
A few episodes ago, I can't remember exactly which one, we reported on the upcoming Battlestar Galactica game based on the Wings of Glory and Sails of Glory games. There's a few more details recently emerged about that. It's going to cover the classic and the reimagined series, the more modern series that was out like a few years ago. The first product out is going to be a starter set, which will be a complete game, much like the X-Wing starter sets for 1st and 2nd edition. Designed as an entry point to a planned range of the Battlestar Galactica Space Battles products that will all follow in 2019. It's going to include four pre-painted, pre-assembled miniatures with special bases to support the game mechanics, which include sort of like the sort of flying that you see in Battlestar Galactica, so positional and sort of flying your ship sideways and that kind of stuff. That's all going to be in there, as I understand it. Quick start rules are included, and it's going to include people like it's going to include like Apollo's Viper and pilot cards, like Starbuck, Boomer, Scar is going to be in there as cards as well. So it sounds very much like it's following a sort of X-Wing format with ships and cars that you can combine together to form your troops. MSRP is going to be about $50. I'll probably translate to around about the same price over here, I would imagine, in pounds. I'm willing to give this a go if they manage to replicate the battles of Battlestar Galactica with these games. Yeah, I'm definitely willing to give it a shot. And there's a couple of pictures on ICV2 have come out of the models, and they look pretty nice. Like, the pre-painters look pretty good. Whether the actual product will be like that, don't know.
As you said, you said in reference to X-Wing miniatures, well, look at the success of that game. It's file the serial numbers a little bit. You've just Battlestar Galactica game. Of course, they're going to try and copy that. I'm quite interested in it. So,
I'm not sure there's the variety though. Like,
no.
There's not a huge variety of ships in Battlestar Galactica, really.
True.
So I don't know how long lived that line can be. I mean, if it's a good game, you can just buy it all and play it. That's fine.
Well, obviously they've said they're also hope to expand the game like X-Men did to them. You know, atmospheric combat rules, capital ships, and bigger things like ordnance, like missiles. When you think of it, like when you get down to the nitty gritty, apart like in X-Wing or in Star Wars, initially there are very few ships, and then they went, right, what can we make up? What can we borrow from these things, these things, these things, and these things? and eventually the game started not scraping the bottom of the barrel, but it was like, here's some esoteric thing you probably won't have seen before, apart from one screenshot. Yeah. But here you go.
I think that's why what's partly why they rebooted X-Wing, was to basically do those, go back to the beginning and start again with the ships. From much, much further afield, there is currently an Indiegogo on the go for an African board game cafe and board games. Right towards the start of Brainwaves, we reported on an African board game convention that was also funding through Indiegogo. And now there's a group looking to share some of their board game designs with the world. You come back to get various games in there. There's educational games, all sorts of different types in there. They're also looking to fund a tabletop game cafe in Abuja, Nigeria. And we wish them best of luck. It's great to see platforms like Indiegogo and Kickstarter being used to allow people from all sorts of cultures to access the board game community and share their designs and ideas. And it's always good when a community like ours gets different inputs, different cultures looking at games and showing off their designs.
Yeah, like you see with film, like you see with music, like you see with literature, you know, certain areas of the world, I'm sure, will play games in different ways and have certain mechanics that stand out, and with modern games, I'm sure we'll get those more traditional influences come through, and you know, just more identities from around the world. So
yeah, basically we're saying diversity is good, do not be afraid of it. It is a good thing to have a diverse player base, diverse designer base, diverse publisher base. These things are all great and bring different points of view on the world into gaming, and that's always going to be a good thing. It has probably not escaped anybody's notice that Cool Mini or Not are back on Kickstarter with their latest project called Cthulhu Death May Die. This is yet another game that is full of great plastic miniatures from Cool Mini or Not, and it has a particular pledge level. It has a miniature, well, I say miniature, this thing is larger than like some small children, and there are pictures to prove it. So it's about half a meter tall, this thing. It's absolutely massive, and it is tied into the final scenario in the game. So if you want the whole package, you've not got much choice other than to back at that level. The pledge to get this miniature is currently at $250 to get the Riley Haley Rising pledge. I probably pronounced that horribly. I apologize for any Cthulhu aficionados in the audience. It's now $250. They attracted a bit of ire because they raised the price that very slightly and the date they were going to ship it. So that pledge is now in April 2020. You'll be receiving your full pledge in there. But what we want to really discuss, the thing we want to really talk about on Brainstorm this week is Kickstarter has seen a massive rise in this kind of game. Big boxes, and Overturn that we were talking about earlier in the podcast as well. Big boxes full of grey plastic miniatures with games that may or may not be good. And is it really necessary to have all these minis and all these luxury products, in air quotes? There are games out there that I would consider luxury and are very small but beautiful art, beautiful components, and are not full of grey plastic miniatures. Do we really need all these grey plastic miniatures, and what is the alternative? What do you think, guys?
I think it attracts a certain type of gamer. I think it's also perceived quality as well. A possibly false perception of quality. You know, you're getting all this plastic, you're getting all this stuff, so surely it's got to be good, right? I'm paying this much money for it, so surely that's a product that is worth me buying.
But don't you think that's just like quality by weight almost?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that is the truth, what I just said, but that's the message it's putting across, very possibly, saying, look, you know, you get all this stuff, it's going to be amazing. Fair enough, the miniatures do look very good quality. They look fantastic. There's some really, really cool things that you get. I love the Haster miniature. I think that looks fantastic. And, you know, if I'm being honest, the giant Cthulhu looks great.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think these minis do look cool, but my experience of these games when they're on the table is that it's just a sea of grey plastic. It's sometimes hard to tell what's what.
Yes.
With some miniatures. And like something like Gloomhaven has got the standees in it, which are a little hard to tell what they are if you set them up wrong. But at least you can tell they're coloured, the game looks good on the table straight away. I don't have to spend hours painting miniatures.
So the versatility, as you're saying, it's a sea of grey plastic. The opportunity is there for you to paint each of your miniatures and give it like a unique flavor that's, you know, to your game, to your thing, so you can pitch and you can see that that is a Shoggoth that is put down, and you know that. I mean, you know, and that's not even from Death May Die. You look at Zombicide and that. Also the versatility that you take this and you lose. Let's just say Death May Die because it's open in front of me. You take that and you use it in a Call of Cthulhu campaign. I mean, if you're coming against it, you're playing Call of Cthulhu wrong. But you know, you have that versatility that you can put them down and you can go, right, this is in my campaign now, or these guys from Zombicide, this is in my campaign now, and I can use this, and I've got these for fighting. And that's great. You know, it's great that there's an accessible source of miniatures.
Cthulhu miniatures.
Because we didn't have enough of those before now.
in multiple games that also play as games rather than just standees that you can put in if you feel like it in a campaign that you might run 5 years down the line.
I'd say, going back to that Sea of Grey plastic argument, I'd say the closest things I've played to that that fit in with that are obviously standard tabletop miniatures games, so something like Warhammer, where you might not have all your stuff painted and you are just running a sea of grey plastic, and that's what that is, you know. But very much part of that experience that Games Workshop and miniature games companies are selling you is the customization and painting your models, which isn't part of this necessarily.
Yeah.
And the other game would be Imperial Assault, which is a dungeon crawler, for want of a better word. You know, you're throwing minis down on a map and playing through that, and they don't come painted. I've painted my core set for Imperial Assault, but I've got quite a lot else for it, and that isn't painted, and that does get a bit, and that can get hard to identify certain models, identify certain things, and yeah, no, I'm with you there.
I mean, I think we've become like, Kickstarter seems to become obsessed with, like, the huge miniature pledges and seeing that as quality. But, like, for instance, like, at lunchtime today, I was playing a game with our friends Isaac and Scott, and Sam was there as well, doing a bit of work, called Civ, which is, like, a little box game, 13 quid, which is absolutely fantastic. Carte Impera Victoria, mm-hmm. which is absolutely fantastic. And I think that's a really lush little product. It's a luxury little product. The card art is lovely. The cards feel nice. There's a little metal coin for tracking
a particular
thing.
Very nice metal coin,
and it's just a nice little package. And I really like those games. I really like the theme coming through in art and nice colorful art. I don't need huge plastic miniatures for every game, and I don't really want them.
I think you don't need plastic miniatures for every game. I think what is prevalent right now is the kind of dungeon crawler. And I think that is the best thing for plastic miniatures.
I think it's also worth pointing out that the name of this company is Cool Mini on Art.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
I mean,
this,
like,
is obviously what they do.
They've built a reputation on it, but it has become the norm for Kickstarter. A lot of Kickstarter board games
to
are
be
now
big box,
this,
lots
this
of
format. Big box, lots of plastic miniatures. Even if the game doesn't necessarily warrant that, just to try and get eyes on their product.
Yeah, and you know, one that springs to mind recently is the Monolith Batman miniatures game, which was so
Gotham
many
City Chronicles. Yeah, two that spring to mind for me are Dark Souls game from Steamforged Games, which of course is also going to have the Dark Souls IP fans also interested, and also the monstrous box of Beat You to Death with It, Kingdom Death Monster.
I mean, I think to be slightly fair to those games, I think the actual number of miniatures on the board in those games, it's actually quite small at a particular moment.
I believe
in time,
it is, but
I'm not 100%
sure. I believe it is, but it is the variety, and again, that it's a dungeon. It's a dungeon crawler. It's a procedural. You unlock and new levels, and you face more powerful characters. Also, at the same time, you think about gamers, and we're always wanting things that look nice and play nice, and that's really good. But also, if you're playing it, you know, small part. Again, this is a conjecture, possibly, that you're playing it, say, in public with a group of people, you want to have a nice table presence as well. And you want people to...
But that's the thing, you see, I think, like, a horde of grey plastic miniatures has no table.
Well, then they paint them.
It just looks like... but that takes time and effort, and not everyone wants to do that. And especially board gamers. Like Sam says, people who pick up 40K and stuff like that, that's part of that hobby. Absolutely.
And
you probably will paint some
miniatures.
It's sort of expected, yeah. Board gamers absolutely are not the same mindset, I don't think. Some will be, but I think it's a much smaller majority than the people who will pick up like a 40K starter set.
Yes, I'm completely with you.
Okay.
And paint it up. So yeah, I don't think that... I mean, like, something like... like another big box miniatures game I can think of that has different colored plastic, which has a bit more tail presence, like something like Cthulhu Wars.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Different factions have different colored plastic, at least. So at least it's easy to tell who's who, who's what's going on.
Well, famously, and, you know, I own, not famously I own, but famously part of that argument is War of the Ring, where the two factions are the good guys and the bad guys. They come in two different types of plastic. Bad guys are red, good guys are blue. But within those two players, there's five factions aside, four or five factions aside, and they're tiny miniatures, and it's so hard to tell them apart sometimes.
Yeah.
So hard to tell them
apart. War of the Ring has a few usability problems from what I've heard about. I haven't played it myself, but I've heard about the usability problems.
Played it once with Sam. Great. Yeah. But yeah, it is a bit kind of... What's
what? I can't tell.
Do you think so? Let's look at War of the Ring briefly then. Do you think that game would have been better if they had like different colored, like cardboard chits, for instance, or something like that, instead of all the miniatures?
I think miniatures are fine because I think it harkens back to stuff like Risk and things like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
And it's aimed at that kind of person, the kind of person who, in their teens, played a lot of Risk, has grown up, wants something a bit more complicated, and Lord of the Rings is that kind of big, grand strategy thing. And to be honest, everyone likes pushing a load of miniatures around a table for a while. That is kind of fun.
It's the tactile sensation.
I agree.
It's why we go for the metal coins. It's why we go for the plastic minis. It's that tactile, lovely sensation of going, yeah, I'll put that there.
But then you look at something like Small World, which is an area control game, could have lots of miniatures, and that is just cardboard tokens representing your guys.
Really, really nicely, really nice art cardboard tokens as well.
Absolutely. I think, yes, miniatures could just be replaced with cardboard chits. You could do that. But actually, it's, will that have the same draw? Are people going to buy that? You know?
The conclusion we're trying to come to is that miniatures, although they do have their place, it isn't necessarily a luxury product if it has miniatures. All sorts of products can be luxury depending on their sort of art, their presentation, the game itself. The whole package needs to be considered for something to be like luxurious. It doesn't need to have necessarily fancy tokens or fancy wooden bits or like that. If it's a small card game with beautiful art, that can be luxurious to you. It's up to you how you value these things. And you shouldn't necessarily think that just because it's got your child's weight in plastic in it, that it's what you should go for.
I think we need to dive into the sociological ideas behind it, because you're paying a lot of money for the, you know, you're paying a lot of money for
this. The purview of this podcast at all, Jamie. I think I'm like a different podcast at all. I mean, there's plenty of brainwaves out there that do deal with psychological damage. And
I mean, probably.
Hello and welcome to Bunker 42, the entertainment bunker, bringing you the best in entertainment, well, the only entertainment in the bunker. Of course, today we are back with yet another individual who has brought their board game, their one and only board game, allowed by the authority. Do not question the authority.
Do not question the authority.
With me today is a tastemaker from the before time, Rory Summers of the Board Meetings blog. How are you doing, Rory?
I'm well. I haven't been eating as much as I would normally like to, but I'm okay. I'm surviving.
You deserve, Rory, and you know it. Do not question the authority's rations.
I do not question the authority. All hail the authority.
All hail the authority.
Of course, as we all know, we were all allowed one board game to bring down into the bunker. Board gaming had become the preeminent hobby of the time, and we all are grateful to our benevolent leaders for allowing us such a small consideration. What is the board game that you have brought down into the bunker, Rory?
Just as the air raid sirens were blaring, as I ran down my stairs, collecting my dogs, my children, and my partner, I grabbed from my shelf my very special copy of Pandemic.
And why was it that particular game that came first in your mind when you were running out of your house?
Well, given the kind of the reason, you know, how the apocalypse all came about, I thought it was quite
ironic.
Do not think about the event.
I don't think about the event. I think about the game, which is Pandemic and completely unrelated to the event.
Completely unrelated.
So I snatched that from the shelf as I ran out the front door, and then made my way to Bunker 44.
Here in Bunker 42, we're interested to know what it is about Pandemic that
we really made you want to bring it down into the bunker with you. What is it about that game that really appeals to you?
What appeals to me most about that game, it's got a lot of cherished memories for me. I remember way back in 2009 when I was first introduced to it, so it harbours a lot of sentimental value for me as well. It's also just so damn fun, in a really horrible way, I suppose. It's very easy to teach, it's very accessible. There's a reason why it was a gateway game, I mean, for 10 plus years before Armageddon.
Do not think about the event.
There's a reason why it stayed with us, why it had so many iterations, which just kind of gave it a new skin, a new breath of life. But it was the core of Pandemic. There was something about those mechanics and that ticking clock, that epidemic, that infection deck and the reshuffling, the simplicity when we look back to where we are from where we are now, how simple that was, but how captivating and how entertaining it was more than anything.
Of course, it does carry an excellent message that we must all work together to get back to the surface one day.
One day.
Did you have many of the expansions in Pandemic and numerous expansions over the years?
Yes. Now, my special copy of Pandemic is in a broken token wooden box. I've got all the expansions inside it, and I've even pimped out some of the components. So I don't have little cubes. I have little plastic disease tokens, each one a different shape and different colour.
Very nice.
Yes, it looks quite pretty on the table now. Everything is sleeved, everything. I don't want to say bomb-proof.
Sleeving is mandatory. The authority does demand that all games are sleeved.
All games are sleeved. Don't question the authority.
And was there a particular favourite expansion you had? Do you think that some were better than others?
I definitely do think some were better than others. The Bioterrorist expansion was interesting. Hidden movement games aren't always my thing, but it can be quite fun how it turns that game just enough on its head to add an extra level, although it is very, very easy, I think, for the Bioterrorist to win. In the Lab was a great one. I forget all their names now, but the On the Brink, which was the first expansion, that was has to be my favourite. It has the mutation, it has the extra roles, probably the best extra roles, additional roles. I forget the other bits now.
That's quite all right, Rory. We all forget things from the before time. Thank you very much for being on today's show, and go about your business, and do not question the authority.
Do not question the authority.
And finally tonight, Glasgow University is planning a tabletop reenactment of the Battle of Waterloo. They're hoping to set a world record for the largest ever historical war game in 28mm scale. Every single unit, battalion, artillery battery that was present at the battle will be replicated in this game.
That's a lot of pain to do.
You can apply to sponsor the event, you can apply to help manage the event, you can apply to paint for the event at the website, which we will link in the show notes. It sounds grandiose and fantastic. It seems to be going on over 4 days in June 2019.
Yeah, I have absolutely zero interest in this kind of wargaming, but yeah, cool. Each their own.
Maybe we should go along and have a look when it happens.
Yeah.
The reason they're doing it is to raise funds for archaeology and veteran support.
Oh, great.
And also to raise awareness of the Battle of Waterloo itself. I mean, Glasgow does have a connection with the Battle of Waterloo in that the Duke of Wellington statue is outside the Glasgow's, outside the Gallery of Modern Art, and is the one that has the traffic cones on his head.
Almost continuously. Wasn't there a record set for that recently? How many traffic
cones? Yeah, recently in the hot weather, it hit double figures of traffic cones on his head. It was wonderful.
Very impressive. I'm sure there's a dexterity game on that.
Should really. Do you know what? Now you say that, patent pending.
I think that's all we have time for this week on Brainwaves. We just like to update everyone with the state of our Patreon. We have a $20 per month goal set at the moment. That covers the website and podcast hosting, which I'm currently paying for out of my own pocket. I'd like to not do that. for too much longer. So if you like what you hear on the podcast, you can absolutely throw us a dollar or two on our Patreon that we will link in the show notes. We're working on some merch, badges, t-shirts, that kind of thing as well, which we will put into various Patreon levels. Hopefully that over the next couple of months you will see that come to fruition. But for now, I'd like to give a shout out to our current patrons. That includes the Unlucky Frog Gaming Podcast, great folks who are doing their own thing with podcasting. We will link all these in the show notes as well. We're Not Wizards as well, which I was on earlier in the year. They do interviews with various sort of board game luminaries. My friend Matt Machel, who is a RPG designer and good mate from the Collective Endeavor days, and a secret patron who didn't want anything at all, but is a friend of mine. So thanks very much. Thanks very much, buddy. And yeah, if you want to have a shout out on the podcast, you can pledge at the $1 level. If you want to be mentioned on our website, that's the $2 level. And there's a couple of other pledge amounts on there as well. So please do go and check that out. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Giant Brain, Instagram Giant Brain UK. Our Facebook page is The Giant Brain. Website is giantbrain.co.uk. And you can, of course, get in touch with any of us at the show at giantbrainuk@gmail.com. Do drop us a line. Let us know if you've got any tasty tidbits of news, got any comments on the things we discuss in Brainstorm. And if you like what you heard tonight, then please do consider giving us a rating on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much.